Shasta College is giving you your first year of college tuition free. If you're a first-time student at Shasta College, even if you've attended college somewhere else or took classes while in high school and you sign up as a full-time student, you could get a year of college tuition free. The Shasta Promise program gives any first-time, full-time student a tuition-free education for a full year. Apply online at shastacollege.edu/apply. Fill out your FAFSA and talk to a counselor today. Don't think you can go full-time with your work or family schedule? Shasta College has more programs just for you. We have compressed programs, evening classes, and completely online degrees to help you get that boost in your career, new job, or transfer earlier with less debt. The Shasta Promise. Just one more way Shasta College is giving you more. Enroll today at shastacollege.edu/apply or call 242-7650 for the Shasta Promise program.
Host Connor Sutton. Thank you for joining us here on a Saturday morning. You can follow me on Twitter at Connor Sutton and tweet me questions or call on 530-605-4567. I'm joined today by my co-host, Dan Anderson, first ever co-host on the show. The sports encyclopedia is what I call him because he has so much knowledge. Thanks for joining us today, Dan.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I want to begin today with the NBA season, regular season just ended. We have our playoffs starting tonight, I believe. And one of the big debates been going on around is the rookie of the year debate. Now, Ben Simmons and Donovan Mitchell are the two players. Simmons, obviously, for the 76ers. Mitchell's for the Utah Jazz. Are the two players really being debated? Now, both players had obviously great years, but I believe Donovan Mitchell should be the one getting the rookie of the year, and I have a number of reasons why. I'll start by saying this. The Jazz in the offseason lost Gordon Hayward to free agency, and we all thought the Jazz were back to rebuilding. Give credit to Quinn Snyder, their head coach, did a great job this year. Their offs players, other than Mitchell, Jay Crowder, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, Ricky Rubio. Rudy Gobert is probably going to win Defensive Player of the Year, but he pretty much can't shoot outside of 5 feet. Ricky Rubio is a pass-first point guard who's worried more about the grease in his hair than winning games. Derek Favors was supposed to be an all-star in his third year. Ever since then, hasn't been very good. Jay Crowder, a perennial role player. Those are the players that Donovan Mitchell took the Jazz to a 5 seed in the Western Conference, in a tough Western Conference. Let's look at Ben Simmons, other players on his roster. J.J. Redick, one of the best shooters of all time, a veteran. Joel Embiid, all-star. Yeah, he was hurt for a couple games, but when he was around, he was very valuable and also a very good rim protector. Dario Saric, good wing player. You could argue that him and Jay Crowder are similar. Jared Bayless, good two guard, can score both multiple ways. And Marco Bellinelli, who was a former Sacramento King, and he was terrible on the Kings. But all of a sudden this year, for the Sixers, he was fantastic. You look at those two rosters, and it's clear. You take Simmons and you take Mitchell off their respective teams, the 76ers clearly have a better roster. Clearly. So, here's my thought on this. If you have a rookie of the year, you kind of have to use it as an MVP debate, Van. You can debate me on this if you want, but it's similar. So, to me, an MVP or rookie of the year, you take your guy off the roster, how good is that team? You take LeBron off your roster, that team's not making the playoffs. The Cavs aren't.
Right, I give you that, but that's for the MVP, but Rookie of the Year has never been like that. It's always, who is the best rookie?
Okay.
And at the end of the day, who's the best rookie? Let me just read you some numbers here.
Okay.
Ben Simmons averaged 15.8 points per game, 8.2 assists per game, 8.1 rebounds per game. He shot almost 55% from the field. His team went 52-30, albeit in a weaker Eastern Conference. Mitchell scored more points per game at 20.5, so almost 5 more points per game. But assist numbers way down, 3.7 and 3.7 rebounds per game. So who would you rather have? A player who scores a little bit less or assists more? He facilitates, he makes his team a little bit better all the way around. Well, I will give you MVP. You hear that argument a lot. I've never heard anybody for Rookie of the Year debate go.
That's why I'm making the argument. Okay, so on the Jazz, though, they have a facilitator. That's Ricky Rubio. Ben Simmons had better scores around him. I think Donovan Mitchell just stepped into a spot where he had the score of the basketball more because they didn't have a pure score. Also, did you see one of the biggest things around the NBA right now is three-point percentage? What was Ben Simmons' three-point percentage this year? Not good.
Well, he can't shoot. That's
right.
what makes it. He's smart enough to take shots that he can shoot 55% from the field. He knows how to make himself better and how to make other players better. You never said that about what was Shaq's 3-point percentage?
Yeah, well, that's
not great.
It was terrible.
Exactly. So he has different.
But he's a point guard. He's a point guard.
Right, but if he can't shoot, Jason Kidd wasn't the greatest shooter of the rock until later in his career. So let's give Simmons some time to work that 3-point percentage out.
Right, I agree with you. I'm just saying that Donovan Mitchell was what, the fifth selection in the NBA draft.
Mitchell, he went 13th, I think.
Oh, really?
He was later.
Oh, that's right, because the Jazz were good last year. Okay, so here's the difference, and I think if you can question this as well too, Dan. But down the stretch, if you want a guy to finish a game, okay, you got Ben Simmons or you got Donovan Mitchell. Who are you taking?
I'm going Simmons because of what I saw him do way late in the season against the Thunder. Against the Cavaliers. He had a huge game where he took that game over. He was dunking on LeBron. He was doing, he looked ready to go. Mitchell, I will give you this. I saw him in person when they played in Sacramento. And honestly, at that point, I barely knew who he was. He was unbelievable. So I think this debate, it's closer than a lot of people will say. I think a lot of people were giving it mainly to Simmons, and then Mitchell had a great push late.
Yeah.
But I do think that Simmons, wire to wire, I will take what he did all season compared to what Mitchell did.
You think it is a factor? Because a lot of people are debating on if it matters that Ben Simmons is technically in his second year as a pro. I think it does only because you're around the team for longer. Okay, you get the travel schedule, and let's think about when LeBron first went to the Heat and then went first back to the Cavs for the second time. It took him a year to really start to gel. He's had that year under his belt in practice, although he was hurt for part of the year, and they shut him down. But he's had that extra time. Donovan Mitchell didn't have that extra time.
I agree. And if that's what the rule you want to make, then great. But the rule is you're eligible as a rookie if you didn't play a minute. So if that's what you want to say, then, yeah, I do think it benefits you to be on the road and be around the team and be in a situation where you have NBA experience. I heard Mitchell talk about it, because Mitchell's really stirred the pot on this.
Yeah, he wore that sweatshirt, that's the definition of a rookie, yeah.
And then
that was great.
He said, how would you feel if you were studying for a test and you had a whole year to study for it? Which I do agree, but the rule does say if you did not log 1 minute, you're a rookie that year, and Ben Simmons is rookie. Blake Griffin did the exact same thing. So
Joel Embiid did too.
I agree if you want to change the rule for future, but that's not the rule right now. But I do think it did benefit Simmons to have that year under his belt, and unfortunately that's the way the cookie crumbles there for Mitchell. So I think Simmons is my rookie of the year.
Who's going to be the better pro? Here's who I think is. I think short-term, Ben Simmons. Long-term, Donovan Mitchell, because Ben Simmons right now is going to have to start carrying the load a little bit more offensively, because when they get in the playoffs, he's going to have to score more. It's just how it works. Your star, if you want to be successful in the playoffs, your star has to score. And Ben Simmons only averaged 15 points a game. He's going to have to bring that up to 20 to 22 if they want to win their first series.
I agree. I think, I don't know, what I've seen from Simmons and Embiid together, they are the real deal. They can really sit here and, they're transcendent players. Mitchell, I'm not quite sure on that. I've seen a lot from Simmons late in the season, especially the game against the Cavaliers. I believe he will be the better pro in the long run. And this is taking nothing away from Mitchell. I think he's a great player. If I had to draft him at the number one pick and those were the top two players, I'd take Simmons.
Yeah. I have to agree with you, but like I said, I do think Donovan Mitchell has been better this year. Mitchell can take over a game late, so I don't think Simmons can. Offensively, he has, you said a couple times, Mitchell had to do it multiple times. Mitchell, again, was the number one option, where Ben Simmons was not.
And it'll be interesting to see, because we're going to see a lot from what we saw with Rondo. They're going to make Simmons shoot the rock, and we'll see how it looks up. So this playoffs is set up. He can really step into his own here.
Or he can crumble.
So, be watching.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, I'll have my NBA playoff predictions in the first round, then I'll tell you who I think will win the NBA Finals. We'll be right back.
At Cypress Sore Eyes on Cypress Avenue, we specialize in personalized service, quality eye care, and competitive prices. Make your appointment today and receive 50% off your frame, plus we'll give you a second pair of glasses absolutely free. Cypress Sore Eyes is your locally owned eye care professional. We accept all current doctor's prescriptions, all major credit cards, offer a military discount, and do your insurance paperwork. See our store for complete details. Cypress Sore Eyes, 722-9992.
Hi, this is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
The Red Bluff Roundup is on. April 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Get your tickets now. $250,000 is up for grabs for 600 of the toughest cowboys and cowgirls. It's the biggest three-day rodeo in the country. Tickets are on sale now, so grab up the good seats while you can. It's consistent action with bucking horses, bulls, barrel racing, roping, wild pony riding, and more. Friday is family night, brought to you by Food Max and Tri-Counties Bank. Gates open at 5, rodeo at 7. And an after party with live music. Saturday is Wells Fargo Bank and Red Bluff Dodge Day. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 2:30. And an evening concert by country music stars Morgan Wallen and Chris Lee. Going up, down, up, back home, 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 girl. Sunday is Haleakala and Dignity Health St. Elizabeth Hospital Tough Enough to Wear Pink Day. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 1:30. Get your tickets now at the Red Bluff office or online at redbluffroundup.com.
Sunshine 300.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Segment 2 here on Sports Talk with Connor Sutton. Today my co-host is Dan Anderson. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Connor Sutton. Tweet us questions or call in 530-605-4567. 6-7. All right, it is time for NBA postseason predictions. Let's start in the West. Houston versus Minnesota, the 1 versus the 8 seed. This is a pretty easy one. I got Houston in 5. Here's why. Butler's coming off an injury, can't handle the pressure of the Rockets, and of course, James Harden and Chris Paul are absolutely rolling. They have so much firepower outside, I don't think Minnesota can stop them. Tom Thibodeau, the head coach of Minnesota, great defensive coach, but I don't think he can guard all those shooters out on the perimeter. So I got Houston in 5. Oklahoma City versus Utah. We kind of just talked about Donovan Mitchell. I got Oklahoma City in 6. Despite poor regular season, I think Westbrook and company are much better than they have played. Utah's too young. Mitchell hasn't played in the postseason yet, and Rudy Gobert can't score. Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, that's a lot of talent to lose in the first round. Now, if they do, Oklahoma City's going to get broken up. But I got Oklahoma City in 6. Portland versus New Orleans. 3 versus 6. Portland the 3 seed. New Orleans the 6. Again, New Orleans without DeMarcus Cousins because of that Achilles injury earlier in the season. I got Portland in 5. Lillard and McCollum are very, very good. Probably the best backcourt in the league. Maybe despite Toronto's. But New Orleans has absolutely no guards. Jrue Holiday, Rajon Rondo, I'm okay. I'll take Lillard and McCollum. They're going to eat him up all day. Anthony Davis isn't dominant enough to win a playoff series by himself, and he's going to be matched up by Jokic, who I think is underrated. So I got Portland in 5 games. This is the interesting one. Golden State versus San Antonio. Golden State, the 2 seed, and San Antonio, the 7 seed. Now, this is contingent on injuries. Obviously, Kawhi's out. Steph's probably out for the first round of the playoffs. So, it's kind of on Kevin Durant. We haven't really talked about this, and I haven't really heard anybody talk about this, but how good can Kevin Durant be in the playoffs without Steph Curry on the Warriors? We saw him do it without Russell Westbrook, but this is a different situation. If they can get Steph back, maybe game 5 or 6, it'll be a little interesting, but I don't even think it'll get that far. I got Golden State in 5. I don't think the Spurs can score without Kawhi Leonard. They got LaMarcus Aldridge. They got a couple other players who can score a little bit, but they're still old. Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker have a lot of miles on those legs, and I don't think they can get anywhere past game 5.
All right, let me look at my Western Conference predictions here. We'll start with the Rockets, T-Wolves as well. I agree with you. This is Rockets all the way. James Harden, he's going to win the MVP. They're hungry. Chris Paul wants to win this thing. There's no way that they let Butler and Thibodeau come in here and take this. I think the T-Wolves are good. They're ready to play playoff basketball. This is going to be some good experience to get under the belt, but it's too soon for them. I like them going forward, but I think it's just too soon for them. I agree with you. Rockets in five in that one. Next up, we have the Thunder versus the Jazz. This one, I think Westbrook is the real deal. He's shown us the last couple years, back-to-back years, averaging triple-doubles here. Mitchell's great. Can he carry this team? I think he's too young. They're too inexperienced. Again, not ready to go. I like Thunder here in five as well. Up top here, we'll look at the Portland Trailblazers and the Pelicans. This is where I disagree with you. I think that Anthony Davis is ready to step up and show that he's ready to go. I think we're going to see Pelicans in seven is my prediction. I think Lillard, like you said, Lillard and McCollum are great. I don't know if this is a great matchup for them. I think if they can get past the Pelicans, they could be real trouble for the Warriors. I think they match up against the Warriors great. But I do think that the Pelicans are ready to go. Drew Holiday, like you said, not on face value, not head-to-head. I take Lillard and McCollum, but I think he's been playing great down the stretch. Rondo's been playing some weird, like, really clutch minutes big time for this team. And what we've seen out of Anthony Davis this last few months with since Boogie's gone down, really, offensively and defensively, he's been unbelievable. He's in my top two for MVPs this year. I think he's ready to step up. I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. I got Pelicans in seven in this one. Last series, we have the Warriors and Spurs. Like you say, yeah, injuries a lot. I think the Steph Curry injury is going to be an issue later down in the playoffs. Not here. I think without Kawhi Leonard, it's not enough firepower. Manu and Parker, they're old. They have a lot of experience. That's good for one game. With Popovich, I got Warriors in five.
All right, let's move over to the East. Toronto versus Washington. Toronto's an interesting team. It's their best season ever for the Raptors. Interesting matchup. Honestly, it's the two best backcourts in the East. John Wall, Bradley Beal. Wall was out with an injury most of the year. He's coming back, but he's looking pretty good. You got Kyle Lowry, who's kind of a bulldog, against John Wall, who's a little bit of a speedster. So they're kind of opposite styles of playing. DeMar DeRozan, of course, for Toronto has been unbelievable. But Toronto's deeper than ever before. They got Ibaka and Valanciunas down low. They are solid, more athletic than Gortat for the Wizards. So I got Toronto in six because their backcourt is just too good. Their depth is too good. And I think Dwayne Casey, their head coach, has got to be up for coach of the year. Moving over to Cleveland versus Indiana. I got Cleveland in four. Here's why. LeBron wants Barrett. Oladipo isn't savvy enough to beat the Cavs. And no one can guard LeBron. Kevin Love, has looked unbelievable since coming back from injury. LeBron played all 82 games, and it's clear the Cleveland doesn't care who they play in the playoffs. In the East, they're a four seed. So I got Cleveland in four. Should be easy matchup for LeBron. Philly versus Miami. I went a little bit off on this one, and it might have something to do with my Ben Simmons argument. I got Miami in seven. I think Philly is too young, too injury prone. Ben Simmons can't carry a team in the playoffs. It's just they can't score. You can't rely on J.J. Redick to hit clutch shots consistently. Miami has Dragic and Wade. I think Wade is going to be unbelievable in this series. He's got a lot of playoff experience. Yeah, he might be old, but he is going to be huge. And, of course, they have the rim protector in Hassan Whiteside. They got a lot of good role players down there, too. Tyler Johnson I really like at the swing position. So I got Miami in seven. That's actually my only seven-game series here in round one. Next up, Boston versus Milwaukee. It's the last one here in the East. Now, Boston's gone through a lot this year. They lost Gordon Hayward on the first game. And then they lost Kyrie Irving. And I got them at six simply for one reason. Brad Stevens. Unbelievable head coach. Honestly, he should win coach of the year for getting the two seed.
That's exactly what I wrote down in my notes right there.
But it doesn't matter. The Greek Freak can't shoot well enough for Milwaukee, that's going to be a huge factor. They got Chris Middleton. They got a couple guys down low. But it doesn't matter. If If Giannis could shoot from downtown, it might be a little bit closer, but he just can't. I think Boston's the next dynasty. They got a lot of young pieces. Rozier, Tatum, Brown. This is going to be a good spot for them. And no one's really talking about this, but Boston really is in such a good spot because all their stars are getting hurt and their young guys are having to step up. And that's going to make them even better, faster down the road. So I got Boston in six.
All right, let me look at mine here. We got Raptors, Wizards, first round. Like you said, I like Raptors in the series. They obviously have a lot of talent. My main question with them going forward is, are they mentally ready? Because they've been beat down the last couple times LeBron has got to them. I don't think it matters in this series. The wall's good, not good enough. The thing with the Wizards, what I've seen with them this year, I feel like they should be better than they actually
yep.
are. Like, they're very disappointing to watch, and I don't see them changing their identity here. I think the Raptors are too much firepower for them. I think Raptors win this one in five. Next up, LeBron and the Cavs versus the Pacers. You gave it to the Cavs in four. I'll give the Pacers one game because I think maybe Oladipo, who should win Most Improved Player of the
yep.
Year this year, at home, that crowd's going to be pumped up for this this situation. I think that gets them one game because the Cavaliers, like you said, they don't really care until this point. So I'll give them like a game to warm up. I'll give them one game, but it's not close. Cavs will win that in five. Next up, the Sixers and the Heat. Like you said, this is the most interesting one on the matchup because we've been hearing a lot of people saying the Sixers can go all the way. You picked them to go out first round. I won't go that far yet. It's hard to see, gauge how good they really are. They were 25-25 at one point in this season. They closed. They won 52 games, so 52-30. Ended with a 16-game win streak, but only three of those games were against playoff teams, so it's hard to see how great they actually really are. But I'll give Sixers in six in this series. The Heat are good, but I think they're too old. They're not quite ready for what the Sixers. I think the Sixers are legit a great team, and we're going to see that in this series. Last up, like you said, Celtics. They have the best coach in the league. I think he should win Coach of the Year for what they accomplished with all the injuries they had. If you told him at the beginning of the season you're going to barely have Kyrie, you're going to have about 15 seconds of Gordon Hayward, and they're going to still win 56 games, something mm-hmm. like that. The talent is too much. All Milwaukee has is the Greek Freak, and he's great, but not that great. I'll go Celtics in six.
All right, those are our NBA postseason predictions. Let's talk about a little bit about who we think is going to advance prior to the first round. We'll just do first round today, but here's what I'm fearful of, and I'm not a Warriors fan. You know that. I'm a Kings fan, so I don't want the Warriors to succeed, similar to you. But it's shocking to me that the Warriors don't want to get Steph back in this first round, and here's why. I think they'll probably beat the Spurs pretty easily without Steph, but getting into a rhythm where you have three very, very good scorers in playing with each other, starting to get their momentum back, I think is key. And I think they're not the Warriors have shown this year that a lot of times they don't really care. And especially with Steph Curry's 30th birthday party. I know Klay Thompson missed a practice earlier this year. They're showing a lack of caring after winning. I think they're a little I'm worried because of that for them.
I agree with you. This is exactly what I am worried for the Warriors, too, because they lost to the Utah Jazz by 40 and by 30,
yeah.
two games. And that's not good. Like, and it's they didn't seem like they cared that much. It was just like going through the motions, which I get. If you're that good that long, it's pretty hard to keep the motivation up. But I didn't see it late. Anybody really care? And what I've heard about this Steph injury is it's the same injury that he had a couple years ago, which he did come back in the playoffs, but he wasn't the same
nope.
guy. This is going to be a serious situation. Like we said, I think we both had the Warriors going through. But it's going to be a serious situation going on. And if the Blazers can get past the Pelicans here, that is where it's going to be, because that's the second-round matchup. If both those teams win, it's Blazers versus Warriors. That's going to be a serious situation because Lillard and McCollum can go toe-to-toe. They showed us in big games that they can go toe-to-toe. I am worried because it looks like they don't care, and it's hard to flip that switch. I think it's a lot harder than people, especially when your best player is Steph Curry. Make no bones about it. Like Durant is great. Klay Thompson is great, but Curry is the motor that keeps that engine running.
Yep.
And if he's not back at all, and you're just jumping into a series where he's trying to shake off rest against the Blazers in the second round, it's going to be a serious situation for the
Warriors. Yeah, absolutely. And Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum have a lot of firepower. And I don't think the Warriors can guard them. Even with Steph, I think it's going to be an issue. But without Steph, it's going to be even more difficult. What are they going to do, put Andre Iguodala on one of them? I mean, they're just too quick. Iguodala may be long. He's just not, he's not young enough, honestly, to hang on to them. I think, so here's who I have winning it. If the Warriors can stay healthy and get Curry back, and Curry can be back to his normal self, which I don't think is going to happen, I have them winning the Western Conference. But if not, I think the Rockets got a pretty free rein to the NBA Finals.
I agree. I picked the Rockets to win this whole thing. I think they're ready. They're the most hungry. This is James Harden's chance to prove that for his legacy that I can do this. He's got Chris Paul, who's hungry. He's never won before either. I think they're the most hungry, and they're going to come out of the West.
Yeah, I agree. But to the East, I think I tweeted this about, 2 weeks ago when Kyrie Irving went down with the injury. I just said, I guess LeBron's going to his, 10th straight finals?
Something like that, yeah. It's insane.
Insane. So here's the thing. LeBron's barely – I had them losing less than – I think it was 3 games getting to the West. Just to the Eastern Conference. Because I think who are they going to play? They're going to play, obviously
– They'll play the Pacers first round and then the winners of the Raptors-Wizards series, which I think mentally they have the Raptors beat down.
Yeah.
I would love to see the Raptors win this thing, but it's hard to bet against LeBron until he shows me he can't do it, and he's been unbelievable.
And you know who's been really good? Is our old buddy George Hill.
He has been great.
He's been really good. What a good pickup that was for them, who played for the Kings later this year. That's why we say that. But, Rockets, Cavs in the finals. That's what I got as of now. And unless the Warriors show me something, it's pretty much the Rockets to win. And I agree. I think the Rockets will win in 6.
I agree with that. I'll go 7 because I think LeBron is enough to carry his team to the 7th game, but the Rockets, too much firepower.
Yep. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We're talking about Simpson University softball's chance at a national title when we come back on Sports Talk with Connor Sutton. Come.
Hi, I'm Bruce Blake, owner of Powerhouse Solar. I'm here with Jeb Allen, owner of Palomar Homes, and we're here at the Salt Creek Heights subdivision.
We're very fortunate to be involved with Powerhouse as they do such a great job on the installation. It's clean, it's simple, it's a no-brainer. The first 34 home buyers in Salt Creek subdivision comes with a solar setup already.
The thing that to me is exciting is that each home has the ability to turn their home into a zero-energy home. Mm-hmm. And they can be part of making this a zero-energy community. The system that we're installing, up to 10 panels, will eliminate all of the kilowatt-hour usage of that home. And if they add a pool, if they add an electric car in the future, then at that point they can add more solar to offset those loads as well.
We've already recognized quite a bit of savings by using SunPower and Powerhouse Solar.
If you'd like more information on Salt Creek Heights and how Powerhouse Solar can zero out your energy bill, call 275-5600 today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kara Tennant with CARE Animal Hospital, and I'm inviting you to join me on the Carl and Linda Morning Show. We will be discussing all of Reading's local pet needs and how to keep your pet happy, healthy, and safe. CARE Animal Hospital is a local veterinary clinic located on the corner of Hilltop Drive and Lake Boulevard. Make sure your best friend has the best possible care today.
Join Dr. Kara Tennant on Friday morning, April 20th, from 8 to 9 on Free Fire Radio here on AM 1460 KCNR.
Oliver, the award-winning musical adaptation of the classic Dickens novel, springs to life at the Cascade Theater with some of the most memorable characters and songs ever to hit the stage. April 19th to the 22nd and 26th to the 29th. Tickets on sale now at the Cascade box office by calling 243-8877 and online at cascadetheater.org.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come. Jefferson, state of mind.
Third segment here on Sports Talk with Connor Sutton here early on a Saturday. I'm joined by co-host Dan Anderson. All right. Simpson University softball has been a perennial winner here on the West Coast in the NEI. And this season, with a little bit of a rough start, however, they have bounced back. They've won eight straight. And they appear to be right back where they started. Simpson started the year nationally ranked, but losses to a lot of top teams knocked them out of the top 30. They graduated six studs last year. But this team, Dan, is very young. And that is what worries me, is because when it comes to do-or-die time, can they step up? And I don't know if they can yet. But that being said, the fact that they are young and they're going to get this playoff experience and this do-or-die experience is going to bode well for them in the future.
I agree. I think that's where we've seen the Red Hawks struggle the most, is when they get out of the conference, because their conference is so weak. They're 11-1 in it right now, I believe. And it seems like it's hard for them to really get up for some of these big games, which they've shown us in the past. But I agree that we have a lot of young talent on this team this year. They look great. They're a lot of fun to watch. But, yeah, when push comes to shove, it'll be interesting to see if they can do it. But that's the other thing, is the confidence that they're getting from playing this schedule. Because I don't – if anybody out there has been to a game, you see Madison Wright stuff. She is a machine.
Yes, she is.
At the plate. It's so much fun to watch because – and she seems to come up in big spots and comes through every single time. Like, it's a shock when she records an out.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And I think she was, what, second-team All-American last year?
I agree.
Here's the and you kind of touched on a little bit. Their problem, they have two problems right now. They only have one legit starting pitcher, and they've been committing too many errors. Especially early in the season, they've cleaned it up a little bit. But again, that's youth, in my opinion, coming into play. Sydney Moorhead has been awesome as a freshman out of Vacaville. She's going to win Calpac Pitcher of the Year, hands down. Haley Nichols, who pitched well last year, hasn't been as good. ERA is up. But again, a lot of that is caused of careless errors. And then you're out there for extra pitches. You're having to throw more. And then all of a sudden, you're letting up runs.
Exactly. I don't know if her confidence is that shook by that, because I know she's making some good pitches. So if the defense can tighten it up and she can get a couple good games, especially at the end of the conference here, where she can start mowing down players and getting some shutout innings, I think that could really help her going forward.
Simpson's averaging over two errors a game. But again, like I said, they're really young. But offensively, it seems like last year they had, it seemed like every single position they might have been the best in the CalPAC. This year, not exactly the same sort of dominance, but in a different way. However, their lineup, 1-9, is incredibly dangerous.
This is unbelievable. Here's conference batting average numbers. Mia Olvera is leading the team in conference. She's batting 581 with 18 RBIs. Madison Wright, as we talked about, she's batting 447. Mazzy Davies, 444. Alexis Parris is batting 439 all in conference play. So that's four players batting over 400, and then Deja Acosta is batting 300. So they have unbelievable firepower. And then Olvera and even Emily Fuller, who I didn't even talk about, big RBI situations, and they come through in the clutch a lot.
Like I said, they should win the conference tournament and get a bid to the opening round. But last year, when they did get to the opening round, they had literally the toughest draw. They had to play the number one team in the country, Oklahoma City, who had won two straight national titles. They'd only lost one game the entire season. Simpson went toe-to-toe with them in an elimination game and lost 3-2, or 3-1, excuse me. And they ended up winning the national title, OKC did. So this team can go toe-to-toe with the best teams, but the problem is when you play these weaker teams, you don't know what to expect. I think that's why head coach Wayne Sorr plays these top teams on the West Coast early in the season, hopefully to get a couple wins. But this is the first time this team's been unranked in 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, I agree. I was about to say that. Wayne has been through this before. He knows this is probably the youngest team he's had in this situation.
Yep.
But he knows that, and he'll have this team ready to go. I like the chance. It all depends on the draw, though. That's the thing. Like, if we get a tough draw like they did last year, that could be rough. But if they can get a first round where they can get some momentum rolling and get some confidence going, I do think they have the ability to step it up and maybe take it all the way.
Right. And I was talking to Tom Akinak, assistant coach, and head coach Wayne Stoer, and Wayne will be on the show probably in the next couple weeks. But he was telling me that sometimes an underdog story is better because there's less pressure. It's easier to be the underdog. When you are a top-ranked team, you have more pressure because you are feeling like you have to win. As an underdog, you're more free-flowing. You can just go out and play instead of focusing on, I have to win this game because my ranking says so.
I agree. And you have that kind of us-against-the-world mentality. Yep. Nobody believes in us, and you can Wayne can really play that up with the players, like, oh, tell the players, nobody believes in you, let's go shock the world, and that really is a great motivator for players going down, like, oh, yeah, we are good. This team, yep. Nobody believes in us, let's go prove them. And I think that, obviously, offensively, they can do it, and let's see if they can put it together. I have a good feeling, but the young factor is a huge question mark for sure.
Simpson University is in the California Pacific Conference of the NAIA, and we'll be hosting the conference tournament coming up early in May. If they win the conference tournament, they'll get a bid to the opening round of the national tournament, where 40 teams will go to 10 different sites, and there'll be four teams in each draw. Last year, Simpson was the 2 seed. I think this year, they probably won't even be a 2 seed. They'd be a 3 or 4 because they are unranked. But again, they have to win their conference tournament. They're 2 games away from clinching the regular season championship in the CalBAC, but that doesn't really do much anymore. It's all about the conference tournaments in college.
They should win that with these. I have not seen a team that can step up with them. I think they'll win with these. They're playing Sunday right here at home. They can clinch that at home.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. If the rain holds up, come out and watch. I think they should win those first 2 games.
Tomorrow and I believe Tuesday, because as of right now, they moved the game from Monday to Tuesday because of the rain. But real quick, I'm very excited for Simpson. Obviously, you and I both work there, so it's entertaining for us to watch, see this team be successful over and over again. And hopefully we'll see them continue to do so in the postseason. But I want to shift real quick. We got a few more minutes here in this segment. We talked about off the air, Dez Bryant released from the Cowboys, and you mentioned you have a hot take on the catch rule, so I want to hear it real quick.
Well, a lot of people, they changed the catch rule, which
right.
A lot of people are saying they needed to do here. I disagree with that because I think it was pretty black and white. It was, you have to have the possession of the ball, and you have to carry it to the ground. So basically what they've done with the new rule is they've cut out the surviving the ground portion of it. All I think this has done is shifted the argument to whether did he hold on to it all the way is now going to be, did he make a football move? Because now the rule is possession of the ball, 2 feet down or 1 foot in another body part, and a quote-unquote football move. They did not define what a football move was. Now we're just going to be arguing about, is this a football move? Is it not a football move? My big thing with it is the rules are already tailored for offensive players. The gloves that they wear are so sticky that why shouldn't we make them possess the ball? Just catch the ball. We shouldn't be making it easier. And the only argument that I heard before was, well, if it looks like a catch, it should be a catch. And that's not an argument. Like, make them possess the ball, and if you go to the ground, hold on to
it. And we're making passing easier. With the no huddle and everything, we saw Blake Bortles throw for over 4,000 yards this year. Joe Montana didn't do that once.
Right.
So it's easier for quarterbacks and receivers nowadays than it's ever been. Why make it easier for them, is what you're saying.
I agree. And they should have just educated the fans better, because if you've watched these games where these big, so the big ones that we always talked about is the Dez Bryant one. The reason we hear about that one, it was a big playoff spot, and it was America's team, so Cowboys fans won't let you stop hearing about it, even though it was correctly ruled. We had the Jesse James one against the Patriots. Everybody will tell you that one because they hate the Patriots and they benefited the Patriots. And the first one was the Calvin Johnson one about 10 years ago. And that was because that was the first time this really popped up, because we had super slow-mo, high-definition cameras. And before, it would have been ruled a catch, no problem. But now we can break it down frame by frame by frame. I think that they should have educated the fans instead of making the shift. It seemed like basically we had a bunch of drunk guys in a bar going, that should be a catch. It definitely was a catch just because that's what I say. And the NFL bowed down to
Roger Goodell's
guys.
Like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I don't think that was the right way to go. I think what this is going to cause is a lot of fumbles, because I'm a Buccaneers fan. Off the top of my head, last year I remember 4 times where the Buccaneers tight end Cameron Bray had the football in his hands, made the catch, and turned upfield, and as he turned, it got slapped out of his hand. Last year, that was an incomplete pass. This year, it's going to be a fumble. We're going to see a lot of fumbles this year, and I think some fans are going to be kicking themselves that they wanted this catch rule changed when basically that was three, maybe 3 or 4 times a year that this happened, and of those three or four times, you only remember the ones where the Cowboys fans and Patriot haters are reminding you nonstop about.
All right, 20 seconds. Here's my last question for you. Okay. A quarterback throws the ball to a receiver. The receiver drops it. It pops up in the air. It's an interception. Should that be credited against the quarterback?
I heard you argue about that. I don't think, no, it should. It should not, but it definitely, unless we're going to go all the way back throughout the time and correct those stats, it's unfortunate for you, quarterback.
All right, fair enough. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our final segment. Sam Comente will be joining us. You listen to Sports Talk with Connor Sutton.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week, there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
This is Terry Oxley, pastor of True Life Church in Bella Vista. I'm sure many of you wonder why the political leaders of the state of California continue to decay into immorality and absolute idiocy. They promote a corrupt worldview that has already proven itself to be destructive and self-serving. The sad thing is that people are being destroyed by blindly accepting these destructive ideas and values. Only through Jesus Christ will you be protected from these deadly values and find the real love and peace you are looking for. If you are looking for a no-nonsense church that's not afraid to talk about current issues and yet teaches the Bible, I invite you to be our guest. Our Sunday services are at 10 a.m. We are located on Deschutes Road, one block south of Highway 299 in Bella Vista. You can visit our website at truelifereading.com. We hope to see you soon. And remember, it's worth the ride.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is the place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
This is Sheila from the Reading Safari Club. Our banquet is April the 28th at Wind River Casino at 5 o'clock. Come out and support your right to hunt. And our youth in hunting, our scholarships, and our veteran hunts. Call Scott at 221-4650, Larry at 474-5075. Get flyers at Old West or KCNR. Games, guns, and fun for everyone.
Final segment here on Sports Talk with Connor Sutton, my co-host tonight today, Dan Anderson, and now we're joined by Sam Comente, who will be broadcasting the Lions Club All-Star Game tomorrow. There's two of them at 4 and at 6 at Simpson University. But first, since you guys were bickering about the catch rule during the commercial break, I'll let Sam give his take real quick.
Well, I was sitting here, Connor, as Dan was explaining what he believed was correct about the catch rule, how he liked what it previously was, and I'm sitting here shaking my head because I don't agree with you, Dan, on that. Because I think it essentially now, like you were saying, we're shifting what the focus is on what refs will pay attention to. I think it's better that refs are now focusing on instead judging what a football move is than what a catch is, because it's more simplistic to make a decision as a referee. Okay, that was two steps and he cut, you know, he made a cut to his right like he's trying to juke the guy. That's a football move. That's easy to judge. Whereas a catch, it's like a 50-50 because we, you know, the interpretation of a catch is so loose. Now,
I think what he's saying, though, is that a football move is still up for interpretation.
Exactly. And I understand that. I'm saying it's easier to interpret a football move than it is what a real catch is based on what I've seen the past several years with this catch rule.
Well, then what they need to do is say exactly what a football is. A lunge or
right.
Is an arm reaching out a football move, or do you actually have to be your body moving towards it? Like, that's the debate we had with the Dez Bryant one.
Right.
Cowboys fans will tell you he was lunging for the goal line. When I see that, by the time he controls it, he's turning, he's falling. As he's falling, he's reaching. Is that enough to say he had possession feet by the time he made the football move? I just think we're putting a lot more interpretation in the referee's pocket now. Before, like you, we were talking about the Jesse James catch
right
last year. That was, in my opinion, was ruled correctly because he caught the ball across. And this is all actually Ben Roethlisberger's fault, because if he would have put it on James, James could have caught it at his chest, taken two steps. He would have been a runner once he crossed the line.
But he had to dive.
But since he had to reach out, he's diving to catch the ball. He doesn't become a runner, and as he crosses the goal line, he needs to survive the ground by the letter of the law. And Tony Romo said it immediately, who was doing broadcast of the game, right when he saw the second replay where you can see the ball move. Romo knows immediately this is not a good situation for the Steelers because of the rule. So what they, and that's, it was clear cut. Whether you agreed with it or not, to me, they got the call right. But now, can you imagine the situation, like if that same play happened to benefit this, the Patriots, everybody hates the Patriots,
right?
And the ref just goes, "Well, it looked like a catch, and it looked like he made a football move, so I'm deciding just because I feel that way today." Like, I think that's going to cause a lot more controversy, because if it's just whatever the referee interprets. Before, to me, it was a little bit more cut and dry.
Was
this
it?
Is black and white. This is a catch. This is not a catch.
All right, 1 minute, Sam. Go
right,
for it.
Okay, I can do all this in 1 minute. All right, first off, a football move is defined, in my knowledge, as 2 to 3 steps with possession of the ball, and you have to be moving upfield. So you catch and you're running laterally, and you knock it out, that's not a football move. You have to be moving upfield, take a couple steps, and preferably make some sort of juke, sidestep, spin. That's what, so if a guy takes 2 steps, spins, and the ball's punched out like Cameron Brate, that's a fumble.
So what you're saying is it might be 2 steps, it might be 3 steps, it might be forward, it might be backward. It's pretty clear cut.
Well, I had a minute here, first off. 2 to 3 steps in a football move is still more clear cut than did the guy have it going with the ground? Was it to his chest? Did it bobble? That was my biggest thing with the football catch, was if it moved ever so slightly, it's incomplete. And that's ridiculous. So what? If he has it to his chest, if it moves a centimeter to the left, how does that take out the fact that he caught the ball?
I think we can all agree there needs to be a more definitive answer for what a catch is in the NFL. It might be better, but it needs to be even better.
Right.
All right. Shifting gears. Getting away from the NFL. Sam, tomorrow you are broadcasting the Lions Club All-Star Game at 4 and 6 at Simpson University. You can listen to that online at SimpsonRedHawks.com. Take me through what you're expecting to see tomorrow. Obviously, we have all seniors playing, and it's a great opportunity for them to show out and have a good time.
Well, yeah, it's always fun to do these games, the All-Star games, because it is wildly unpredictable. It's an All-Star game. You really don't know what to expect, because these are all the best from this area, not just Shasta County, Butte County, Trinity County. They reach out and get a lot of people.
They do, yeah.
So it's really hard to really say who's going to do well, but I was looking into it a lot, and I'm 2 years removed, as I was telling you, from high school, so I'm not really up to date as to what's been going on with high school sports, but I had no idea. A couple things that stuck out to me. I'm a UPrep alum, so my UPrep boys team went 9-1 in league this year and won their first ever playoff game under Coach Mark Stevens, who was coaching, I think, the North girls.
Yep.
So that's great for him, even though he's not a girls coach, but it's great for him to be a part of that. And then Mount Shasta went 10-0 in league play and won Division 5 NSCIF basketball championship, which is a big accomplishment to them. They have a couple players. So there's a lot of good teams that they took players from this year that had outstanding years. The big thing I'm looking forward to is there's a lot of scorers in this game. As I was looking at stats, a lot of players that clearly have the ability to just shoot it, and that is where you're going to be the best at an MVP game, an All-Star game, because you're just going to shoot it as much as you want. Thurman Knowles is a guy that comes immediately to mind from Foothill, who is just a pure scorer, and you give him in an environment like this where he's got a green light. I can't even imagine how many points he's going to score. So it's going to be exciting. I think the Ben's game for sure is going to be really high scoring.
Are there any undercover players that you think could win MVP that maybe people wouldn't think off of? If you read this list, you'd be like, okay, maybe this isn't someone I would think would win MVP, but they still might.
Yeah, that's tough. Because I don't want to go with Thurman Knowles, and my other MVP was Anthony Gore from Mount Shasta, who's their captain and was one of their best players. Also, a couple enterprise players that I know of are really good players. My undercover MVP, I'm actually going to go with the brother of a Simpson student, a Simpson soccer player, Adam Danius' younger brother, Philip Danius, is playing in this game, Reading Christian, and I actually got a scouting report from as many people as possible about Philip, and their take on Philip is that He is a flashy, or not a flashy, very well-rounded player. He's a team-first player, which doesn't fit in an all-star game.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't at all, but that's why it's a great undercover thing, because he can really dish out the assists. I'm sure he'll really set up other players to score, and I think when he gets his opportunities, he's going to score because he'll feel comfortable.
He's actually signing to Simpson on Wednesday, by the way, to play soccer, men's soccer, not basketball. All right, so how many players are on each team? It's a lot of players.
I think altogether there's like 58 to 60.
So there's a lot of players. So basically playing time is going to be a little bit tough. So it's going to be who gets hot and who can ride the ship. It should be a very fun event. You've called it the second year calling the game.
Yeah.
What did you see last year that you're surprised about? Or is the pot of talent better last year or this year from the seniors?
Yeah, that's tough to say. I from what I've dug into and read about it, I think the talent might be better this year just based on how these teams did locally. And the records they put forth and the you know, records they broke and whatever. And I like the group of girls, particularly as I looked into all the girl players. There's a lot of good athletes on this girls' side. And the men's team, I got no qualms about them and their ability to rack up points.
So, okay, let's go to the women's side real quick. What players are you looking for to possibly have an MVP-type performance on the women's side at 4 p.m., I believe?
Yeah, 4 p.m., the first game. I got two that I'm going to kind of say Kate Walton from Shasta, she's like a four, I think, maybe a center. She averaged a double-double, 15 points, 10 rebounds a game.
Wow.
Even four steals for a big girl, or big man, if you want to say it like that. I don't want to say big girl. So I think she's definitely a candidate. But in an all-star game, it might be tough because she's not going to be one you expect to be shooting from distance or shooting it really in particular. So I'm going to go with Livy, I think her name's Livy Lindsay from Reading Christian, who led all the scores of everyone I looked into. She averaged 20 points last year a game for Reading Christian. You put a score like that in an MVP game, an all-star game, she'll be an MVP.
So when we see an MVP, or excuse me, an all-star game, and you have everybody trying to go for MVP, it seems like you're saying there's not going to be a whole lot of passing. It's going to be a lot of one-on-one. It's going to be a lot of look at me. But I think what's interesting about this all-star game, I've seen the Optimist game in Sacramento. I actually played in it, I don't know how many years ago, but whatever. So
Got to make sure you say that, yeah.
No. Anyway, so basically there's a lot of passing, right, in the normal basketball. That's how you beat. But when you go to an all-star game, there's not as much.
There's like one or two guys that are responsible for passing, and everyone else is shooting.
Right. So I think what's different about this all-star game is there's actually a lot of facilitating, more than I've seen in most high school all-star games. Would you tend to agree with that?
Yeah, from what I saw last year, these kids, you know, they want to be flashing, they want to show off. But they all really know each other. They're not from, you know, different schools. They Foothill, Shasta, Enterprise, they all played each other.
Probably played together in AAU
Go way back. So they're not wanting to be greedy. They know each other well. So, I don't think there'll be people being too selfish, but there'll definitely be that one or two players that are just going to take it themselves. All right.
Do you got a predictive score for us tomorrow?
Dang, that's a tough one. I'll just say, guys, I can assume it could get close to 100.
Okay.
I'll say that just because I feel like there's a lot of good scorers.
So you're going to be out of breath, is what you're saying.
I will. I don't know how I'm going to keep up with that,
okay,
but I'll try my best.
Sam Comente, he's calling the Lions Club All-Star Game tomorrow. That is at 4 and 6 at Simpson University. If you want to come check it out. If not, you can listen and watch online at SimpsonRedHawks.com. Well, I want to thank my co-host today, Dan Anderson, who and I had a great debate in the first segment, and then him and Sam had a little debate here in this segment.
I didn't even get a chance.
But next week, we got a lot of fun stuff. NFL draft preview. I'll have a guest come on for that. Hopefully I'll have Wayne Storer from the Simpson University softball come on and talk some softball with us. And we'll have tons and tons more. We thank you guys for joining us here on episode 2 of Sports Talk with Connor Sutton. Hope you have a great day. And let's ride out with some Pocketful of Sunshine, shall we, Jared? Oh, yes.